Oh my gosh, happy podcasting day. It is 4:44. I know that I say that often when we're doing the filming, so I just wanted to let you know that it is already. Okay, so hi, I'm Rachel Vogt. This is A Good Girl's Guide 2, and I am super excited, as usual, to be here doing the podcast with you. So if you are new, welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad that somehow we found each other. Feel free to reach out to me at agoodgirlsguide2@gmail.com to let me know how that happened. I would love, love, love to give you some love and connect if you'd like to. So let me do a real quick plug, and we're getting into some content for today, so I'm going to try to wrap this up a little bit quicker. Free content happens all the time on the Book of Face, on Instagram, on here, on, of course, Anchor, and on the TikTok, all at A Good Girl's Guide 2. You can even find my personal Facebook page at facebook.com/A Good Girl's Guide 2. So very easy to find me, very easy to get free content. If you feel like we are vibing together, then I would love, love, love to be your friend. I'd like to work together. I'd like to just whatever, whatever. Okay, so free information. And then if you are looking for a place to be in an area of sexual wellness and intimacy building, but you got to be 18 years or older and of feminine energy, then let me know. We'll get you invited to that group as well. It's just phenomenal. It's just fantastic. I can't say enough good things. Giveaways, sales, discounts, pictures of half naked people, but a lot about empowerment for sure. So make sure to let me know if you need an invite for that. And last but not least, if you'd like to do the empowerment class, it's a really great way to do an online training, basically about how to dive into personal development. What's it about? What's it going to take? What is it going to mean to actually have change stick in your life? And then one-to-one sessions if you are looking for a program more geared for one-to-one services, basically. So move you through it a little bit faster. So that's it. Those are the ways to contact me. So like I said, let's get into some content. So today, I want to talk about using the very popular phrase. Well, I mean, I'm going to title this, I believe, I Have No Regrets, because I think that's the thing that we can all easily relate to as the phrase. Oh my gosh, I just like threw my speaker across the room. So if that was something that you had a headset into, I'm just sorry for ruining your hearing. anyway, so I Have No Regrets. And I did a podcast about this with Anderson a while back, and it was in reference to using the phrase, like, everything happens for a reason. It was a really good conversation to dive deep into, like, because for some people, it's an incredibly annoying phrase. And for others, it's even almost a hurtful phrase, like, I didn't ask for that abuse, I didn't ask to be, abandoned, so on and so forth. So check that out if you're interested. But this is kind of in relation to that for me, because while I do believe everything happens for a reason, like, on a very logical reflection, I guess I would say, that's the truth of the matter. Like, when we talk about everything happens for a reason, meaning, like, everything was out of your control, and now you have willed this car accident, that's, I think, what the cliche thing about everything happens for a reason that people kind of dissect that with. But the actual truth of the matter is that, yes, everything happens for a reason. I sit in this chair because I bought this chair for Nebraska Furniture Mart, like, 5 summers ago. I drive a Dodge Journey because I used to drive a Suzuki, and when I was getting ready to do some maintenance on the vehicle, I bought new tires, and then I took it to a mechanic, and it turned out there was going to be way more money to invest in redoing or fixing the vehicle than just to getting a new one. And so I took my Suzuki to a dealership and traded it in for my Dodge Journey, like, within 48 hours. So I have a Dodge Journey because I was just fed up with another car. Not because I went out and was seeking this Dodge Journey. Not because I did all this consumer research and decided that was probably the best option for me. So that's the point of really, sticking to that everything happens for a reason. Because it truly does. There was a sequence of events and actions that had to happen prior for this thing to manifest or take place. And so here we are. Okay. But when we move into this other segment, I Have No Regrets. Like, this is something that's been kind of pulling at me the last couple of weeks, and we'll talk about the woo-hoo-y side of it in a little bit. But like I had said, I think that's really common when we talk about having no regrets. Like, people can say that because they say, well, I can't have regrets because if I had regrets, then everything wouldn't have happened the way that it was supposed to. I wouldn't have this child. I wouldn't have this promotion. I wouldn't have that experience. And that's true too. But it's all about kind of this mentality that we have surrounding that event, and whether it was traumatic or a good experience or whatever we deem it, you know, it's just something that we probably want to take a little bit more of a deeper look into. Okay. And when I talk about, like I said, having no regrets, the phrase that I really want to lean more into is that I couldn't have asked it to go another way. And I think that that is really good in terms of clarifying our message about intention. You know, we've discussed previously that the universe doesn't hear words. If it did, everybody would speak the same thing, including animals, and animals don't even use the same type of language that humans do. So every human being, every living species on Earth communicates via emotions. Like, you can call me crazy if you want to, but you can go into the Google and take a search for it. Like, most of us even know that when you speak to your plants, they grow differently. When you speak positive, there was even a quantum physics study about somebody who talked to water molecules positively and negatively. And when it crystallized through ice, you can see that there's different looking types of crystallization. And the positive ones look pretty like snowflakes, and the negative dialogue that went on between the water and the human have different visualizations that look kind of scary. So there is so much power in emotion and so much power in, I would say, in words, but it's really the emotion behind those words, because words mean nothing, right? I mean, we have 45 words for one thing. We have one thing that can be, well, it's the same thing. We have one thing that can be described 45 different ways. You have 45 different variations of one particular word. Words are confusing. Words are confusing, and they're not universal. So we have to really remember that that's how we dial into anything, not just when we pray and talk to our higher power, but when we're subtly reading people's body language. That's about emotion too. That's not about words. So there's so much behind that, and we need to be practicing with ourselves and the, you know, being better at being able to recognize that in the world. But when we talk about, I couldn't have asked it to go another way, that to me, like I said, it kind of references having no regrets. But I don't think that's true. Do I have regrets? I mean, yeah, I have regrets about the way I behaved in some situations. I have the regrets about my lack of ignorance in some situations. I have regrets about the way I handled things. I might have just said that, but I absolutely do have regrets. Like, I'm sure that everybody still has moments where you're driving in the car and all of a sudden you're like, ooh, and something, you are reminded of something that you did in eighth grade, or something you did at your very first job, or something you said in front of somebody incredibly important, and just makes you cringe because you're like, I wish I could take that back. Right? So yes, everything that you've ever done in your life is a proponent to the next thing that happens. So it's not a matter of us being able to go back and dissect these moments that we dislike about ourselves and pluck them out of history and, you know, shoo them away. But there's this really powerful realization when it comes to manifestation and, you know, the woo-hooey side of things, is that that's all that manifestation and meditation really are, right? We've talked about previously that meditation is not about sitting in a room and shutting off your brain and just sitting in darkness and silence. Like, that's not what meditation is. And I think there's a very large misconception about that. And I think that some people don't try it because that's what they think it is. And then when people try it and it doesn't go exactly the way that they saw a yogi do it in a movie once, then they think that they're failing. But you have to give yourself so much credit in recognizing, like, even if you just give yourself 3.5 minutes of silence, you are ahead of the game more than other parents and corporate workers and so on and so forth. Because what do most people do as soon as their alarm clock goes off? Pick up their phone, check their email, get into the bathroom, start getting ready, maybe go get kids ready, whatever your morning routine looks like. For a majority of humans, if you've been following along with me for a bit now, hopefully what you're really looking to do is, like, you get up in the morning, you don't even get out of bed. And if you grab your phone, it's for a guided meditation. It's for some light reading about personal development. It's for a feel-good story about mankind. It's something that you're filling your intentional tank well. So it's feel-good stuff. It's not programming you for anxiety. It's not programming you for go, go, go. It's not programming you for the deficiencies that you didn't get done yesterday, your to-do list that's never ending, the dishes that were left in the sink. It's not about that. And we have swung so much into that. Like, when I was a kid, it wasn't even as bad as it is today. And I talked about this, you know, in my live last night on Facebook, about it being a hustle culture. And I, by the way, just as a side note real quick before, I'm gonna make a note so I know that we're at, because last week was the podcast, I did it with Josie. It was fantastic. We talked about synchronicities. Two podcasts ago, I talked about why I don't think I'm gonna be a millionaire anytime soon. And I didn't even listen to the podcast back, but I, like, we were just talking about, like, driving from time to time, I would do one of those, ooh, did you really say that? Did you really say that? And I know I said repeatedly that, you know, I always want people to hear my heart. I always think that people need to hear that just because you're doing things one way is different. It doesn't mean to make it wrong. I also really, truly didn't have any intention of coming off mean. But I do feel like I was, like, really harsh about what I kept saying about this mentor of mine that I really love. And I was just like, she's really the only reference that I have. So I feel like maybe it sounded personal, but it definitely was not. And on a very good positive note, I just want to tell y'all, still follow her, of course. And she just had an amazing weekend with a new interest, like a love interest. And it seems like they've been dating for a while. So I just wanted to just say that, by the way, because part of the biggest thing that I kept comparing myself, which comparison's wrong, you shouldn't do it, but here's why I'm apologizing two episodes later, right? Is because comparing, like, that was kind of the thing that I had mentioned, is I felt like I had a family and I had, you know, a partner that I was very much invested in. And that's what I felt like she may have been missing in her life. And it wasn't ever to say because I thought I was better than her. I really wanted that for her. I really do want that for her. So I just wanted to share that little update. Like, I really am excited to follow her journey and see where this goes with her love interest. And I hope that it works out very well. So that's what triggered me to think about hustle culture, right? So I was talking about that on my live, but you know, that's what we grew up with. In my world, when I was a kid, I don't know if you can relate to this, but like I had a parent who worked around the clock. Like he just didn't have a job that it was a 9-to-5. It was railroader. So as long as you had gotten a 12-hour break from the last time you were released from work, you were up to call at any time. That was the mandatory, is that you had to be left alone for 12 hours and then they could call you at any time. So he pretty much was. It was rare if he wasn't on vacation that he wasn't on a 12-hour turnaround time of getting right back onto a train. And it was just crazy, you guys. It was just crazy. So there's that mentality, is that you have to be available at the drop of a hat to feed somebody else's dream, right? Because he didn't get nothing big from working for the railroad. He didn't get part ownership from that. And then there's this other mentality, like, even though I didn't learn this as much from my mom, I can say there's hustle culture in being a parent with, you know, having school stuff and having them involved in things. And even if you don't have children, maybe you have, you know, fur babies that are involved. You're involved with this in this regard about taking them to doggy daycare or a vet visit. Or you have littles like nieces and nephews, of course, too. So there is just always like you're not being productive if you're not doing things, if you're not moving. That's what I feel like sometimes the mentality is kind of placed upon us about in this culture. And as we've discussed previously, like for a lot of you, it doesn't sit right. For a lot of you, it doesn't, the grind doesn't feel natural. Like you feel a push and pull and a tug at you. And you're like, it just doesn't sit well with me. Okay. And we're going to progressively see this more and more and more as workers become younger and younger. We've talked about that before. Like it's just this culture of we're not about raises and monies. We're about culture and we're about, you know, making friends at work and feeling appreciated and so on and so forth. And that's really important because when we talk about like living in a work environment that was placed upon us, again, it's this expectation. Well, it's always been this way. It's always been this way. You've always worked a 9-to-5. You've always saved for your retirement. You've always done this. That's just what we've always done. Yes, that's true. But we also used to always have pensions and we used to always have Medicaid or Medicare that was going to be accessible to us as we were getting to retirement age. And we also died earlier than we do nowadays and we weren't as in good a shape or longevity of our life and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's always this catch-22 to saying that things were always that way, but the things are always changing. They're always changing. And so anyway, asking for things to have gone a different way, it almost seems asinine, of course, because one, it's like, well, it can't happen. So why even stress about it? And two, again, it got you to where you're at. But in personal development with the meditation, as I'd mentioned, you know, we're not shutting our brains off. We're not sitting in dark light and just oming our way through it. What meditation is absolutely more about is recognizing that your brain and your mind are two completely separate things. They're two completely separate things. Your brain is a powerhouse that tells your body what to do. It sends these electronic pulses throughout the body, heartbeat, lungs, pump air, so on and so forth. Oh, scratch your nose because it itches. These are the receptors that are bouncing back and forth between your physical body and your brain, telling it how to interact in the world as it is right here, right now. However, that's just functionality. So there is a separation between that functionality and your mind, which creates your emotions and how you feel about everything. That's so powerful. That's so powerful because they're two different things. They're two different things. So when your emotions drive your life, that's the way things are supposed to be. But what happens to us is that we have a reaction from our body and then we play into the emotion. And that's difficult because it's like, well, what's wrong with that? If I touch a hot stove, then my body needs to tell me that this is a burn and I need to jump back. You're right, exactly. That's exactly how your brain got programmed into that understanding, is that I touched this hot stove. By experience, I learned I shouldn't touch this hot stove anymore. So, ouch, I'm going to program that into the brain. Let's never do that again, right? So same philosophy is that, let's say I go to ask this guy out and he tells me no. Ouch, that hurt. It's not real pain. It's emotional pain, but my body doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know the difference. It just knows that I'm feeling a certain way. And when you touch a hot stove and when you feel rejection or abandonment, your body reacts physically the same way. Your heart rate quickens, your pulse also rises, your body temperature increases, you feel uncomfortable, you might feel shortness in your breath or tightness in your chest, whatever it might be, your body physically reacts to that. So it's doing that physically as well as emotionally when you're going through either experience. It doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know the difference between the two of those. So it's so important for us to really recognize that the mind is what's supposed to then be able to interrupt. When we work on meditation, we're exercising that. We are untraining our brains that it's not that I react to bad things with emotion because my body's telling me to do so, because I experienced this hot stove, because I experienced heartbreak. So now my body goes, okay, so induce all of these feelings so that whoever's listening, whatever you call yourself, so that Rachel knows now to cry. So that Rachel knows now to feel abandoned, so that Rachel feels lonely. This is what you're supposed to feel when you ask somebody out and it doesn't go your way, because your previous experience has programmed that to do so. The same way is that when you learn to walk, you just put one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. It's the same philosophy. You learned how to do that. And then your body autonomically does it the next time you pick up your feet to start walking. You don't automatically think left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. Just the same way as that when you say, hey, would you like to go out with me? And he's like, no, biah, you are not my type. Brain immediately goes, abandonment, rejection. All of the things cascade through you because you've been programmed for that experience. Okay, so when we're doing this meditation and we're separating mind and body, it's so important because it's something that I've had to drill into my own understanding that I was being driven by my body, that I was not in control of my emotions, that my emotions were overtaking me. And so when you start this separation, this understanding, there's a couple of visualizations that might work really well. One of my favorites is that when you're practicing meditation, what you want to do is basically pretend that you're a person sitting on a bank of a river. Okay, so you are watching this bank of this river just flow. Okay, so the thoughts are your river. Okay, and from time to time, you're going to see things. Maybe it's animals, maybe it's people in canoes, maybe it's driftwood, whatever. This thing is going to come down the river, and the rushing water is enough. It's enough of a distraction, right? You could watch that all day. That's your 60,000 thoughts a day that you're producing, right? But then something pops in like the driftwood or the beaver or whatever it is, and that's a larger distraction scale, right? You can make up whatever that is. It might just still be another thought, but it might be a bigger thought, a bigger emotion or whatever. And so you sitting on the bank, you wouldn't get into the river and go swim with the beaver. I mean, you might if you're Rachel, right? But you see what I'm saying? Like, to practice this, you're just observing the beautiful river. You're just watching nature take its course and do what it's supposed to. That is you separating that. So if by chance, let's say, we're going to relate this to asking somebody out and feeling abandoned, right? So if I'm in the river, right, and I see a raft of people coming at me. They're whitewater rafting. They're really enjoying this river. They're super excited. Even though they're supposed to be paying attention, they don't see me. They don't see me even though I'm standing in the middle of this rushing river going, wait, wait, I'm waving my arms down, right? That's the same as like not being in charge. Like that's allowing those emotions to take over me because I'm not on the bank. I'm in the middle of the river. I'm going to get plowed over by these whitewater rafters. But if I'm on the bank watching the whitewater rafters flow by, I'm not going to get knocked over, right? I get to control what happens in this experience. I'm just observing it. And then I get to decide, did I think it was entertaining? Do I get to giggle and watch these people? Do I get to be scared for these people and sit here and really feel that emotion for them? Do I get to be curious? Maybe some of these people are, you know, taking their very first float trip. And so do I get to be curious with them? And so I could go on forever about what the options could be, but it's the same, right? Is that if I walk into a bar and I try to pick up a dude, I'm standing in the middle of the river. If I haven't gotten really conscious about myself, if I haven't really gotten intentional about who I am, if I haven't gotten to a place where I feel comfortable with myself, I'm going to feel like I'm going to get dog piled by a raft if I'm not in tune with my emotion. If I'm in tune with my emotion, I'm on the bank of the river. So I asked this guy out and he says, I'm not really that interested. And I was like, cool. That's too bad. You seem really cool, but thank you so much for the opportunity. That seems really crazy. Like, most of us would never do that. But if you could step back and go, like, how on, and I see the catch 22 with this, right? How on God's green earth can this person judge me in 3.5 seconds to say, you're not my type? Well, let's hope that maybe, you know, maybe he's just homosexual. Maybe that's the easiest thing. And I don't know. Okay, maybe I just have really bad gaydar. I don't know. But my point is really more about, okay, thank you so much. And then walking away and understanding that person could not understand or know who you are in 3.5 seconds. So you can't take it personal. Maybe that person just broke up with somebody and they just don't want to tell you in the bar for 45 minutes about how they are barely hanging on. And this is their first social interaction since they were dumped miserably. Okay. We never know what the other circumstances are. Maybe they are just staying celibate for a while because they had a string of bad relationships. Maybe they are testing their sexuality with somebody else. Maybe they are, you know, pining for somebody that they've been trying to, like, you don't know, but it's so normal for us to internalize and walk away and feel like we just got knocked over by the raft instead of hanging out on the beach, watching that super hot person just swim through on the river and going, hey, what's up? You know, and just appreciating the view, I guess. So meditation is really important because in instances like this, when we talk about, like, I have zero regrets, I don't have any regrets, I had to have those things happen to get where I'm at. So yes, theoretically, it's true because they happen to you in your life and we can't undo our past. Theoretically, we can't undo the past. Just remember from other podcasts, if you might have listened, I mean, time doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is this moment right now that I'm recording this podcast and I'm literally watching the microphone on my phone, like, light up green. That's the only thing that – it's not the only thing that matters, I guess you shouldn't say, but it's the only thing that's happening. It's the only thing that's happening right now. Right? So we get so hung up on things that don't exist, that happened previously, that really have no bearing on what's happening to us in this current moment. The things like, you know, the weather and the air quality and your emotions and the way you're feeling and what you're planning to do for the rest of the day. Those are the things that matter because they're happening right now and right here. But the first time you asked somebody out and they rejected you, theoretically, that does not matter here right now in this moment. But your programming allows for that to be an autopilot progress or procedure. So you got to delve into that just a little bit, right? So anyway, in a lot of personal development, what I have seen in conversations about how to get to the next level, how to personally develop, how to spiritually grow as well, is there's a lot of conversation about doing shadow work. There's a lot of conversations about doing trauma healing. There's a lot of conversations where we talk about healing your inner child, basically. So this makes so much sense because, you know, when we talk about being programmed, that is during your formative years. And it starts, of course, from when you're born, but we really start to form solid memories around the age of 2 or 3, just depending on person. And some of us it's earlier and some of us it's later. But our formative years, let's just say on average from the peak years are 2 to 13-ish. But you definitely have a malleable memory until you're in your teens. And I, as I have said repeatedly before, I believe that we're still programmable. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't be able to change, by the way. So it's not a bad thing that we're programmable. It's just something that we need to be aware of. Okay. So during your formative years, where you're really heightened to making memories that, you know, I mean, I don't know what your favorite memories are from when you were a kid. Maybe it was traveling. Maybe it was eating your favorite foods. Maybe it was playing with your best friends. I don't know. But some of these other things that maybe weren't our best memories, it doesn't change the fact that they were part of the primordial soup recipe that went into our programming. So all of these things like touching the hot stove or asking somebody out, and it goes back even further potentially. Maybe you asked your parent to play or hang out with you. Maybe you asked a best friend or a new person to hang out with you and they said no, and you felt that rejection too. You just never know, like, where it necessarily comes from. And you can get to the root if you want to. I just need you to hear my heart when I tell you it's actually not necessary. That's the disconnect that took me a long time. And I still struggle with this a lot when I work on trauma work or when I work on trying to heal myself or figuring out why I'm reacting in certain ways that I can't pinpoint. I often think that it's like, okay, well, I have to figure out the root of this problem. I have to figure out where the very first memory started so I can go back to that and I can not only recognize it and understand it, but maybe that will intellectually allow for me to understand why I do what I do today. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think that there is a lot of logic behind that, but – It's also difficult. A lot of us have amnesia around memories, especially if they are trauma-filled. We might completely block them off that we have no idea that they even happened. We can't imagine that they happened to us. So it's not always feasible that you'll get to the root of the memory, and it's also just a time waster. It's not to say that you can't, but I'm just saying that there are other ways that you can get to healing yourself and that inner child and your trauma and so on and so forth without having to practice meditating on the actual moment that created it, if this makes sense. So when we talk about trauma, trauma healing and doing the inner work, inner child work, it makes a lot of sense, but it also kind of sometimes probably feels a little weird because a lot of time what we're going to do is that you might recognize a moment maybe in your current reality where you snap at a partner or you feel obligated to do things that your boss asks you to do, right? So this is definitely never only always about intimate relationships. This is about relationships with your caregivers, even if you're fully grown. It's with your children, of course. It's with your friends, your family, your coworkers. It's with people that you randomly, you know, interact with as strangers on the street too. It all matters. It all matters. But we are conditioned by our previous experiences. So if you decide to sit down and actually pull at a feeling or a memory, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. But what I've seen a lot of activities or exercises in growth talk about is just going to a moment. So maybe you can't recall the exact moment that somebody implanted abandonment in you. Maybe you can't recall the exact situation that rejection scarred you for life. But you can envision yourself as a little person. And if you can recall the exact moment, that's fine too, but it's not mandatory. So you can recall the emotion and see it in yourself, all right? So the easiest way to heal that is to go to yourself in that moment. And this absolutely can feel weird. It can feel silly. I get that. But especially if you're doing it in your head, nobody even knows that you're doing it. And this is what I always tell people. Like when growth and personal development make you feel uncomfortable, you're on the right track. You already know that because you already know you can't grow in your comfort zone. If you did, you'd be everything you wanted to be right now because you've been living in this place for God knows how long, right? I've been in my new comfort zone for the better part of 2 years. I had a massive overhaul and change in my life 2 years ago, and it shook everything up in the best way possible. And I got to better eating, better mood stabilization, better mental health. And that became my new comfort zone. So here I am over here trying to grow into a new comfort zone because I need to do some more growing. So yes, it sounds silly to sit down and go, oh, little Rachel, I know it sucks to feel abandoned by your dad. I know that you don't like being ignored when you outwardly are trying to have a conversation with him. It might feel silly. It might feel silly, but what's the worst that's going to happen if you are trying it? Really, I mean, I could go on forever about it, but I've envisioned myself several times. There's one very vivid memory I can recall being the only person in the room with my dad, and I was second grade or younger because I can remember the house that we lived in, and just asking him a question. And there was no way he didn't hear me because the room wasn't that big, and he just didn't answer me. And I would go on to say this probably would happen more often, but this is just one of the particular instances I can very much recall. And I can remember feeling like pained very, very much so. Like I, if I had to, I would say I definitely felt like abandonment or rejection mostly, but it just didn't, it was a feeling of not feeling good enough. Like, why does anyone talk to me? Like, I just asked a question. Am I being annoying? Like, I don't understand, which would later go into making me feel insecure about asking questions in general. So I would pretty much never ask my dad a question for the rest of my life, about how to do things. Specifically, I would turn to my mom there, and that didn't work out so good either because she ended up buying me a book that said the big book could tell me why. So this is definitely a memory that I'm working on is that, Rachel, it's not wrong to be curious. It's not wrong to ask questions. It's not wrong to be wondering how things work. It's not wrong. It's not wrong to not know those things either, because that was definitely a fear of mine that was implanted, was that you should know this already. So when it came to schoolwork, never ask questions. When it came to trying to figure out stuff, I never asked for help because I was under the assumption that I should have known already, that it seemed like it made me stupid to not know. Oh, God. God. Oh my gosh, I'm terrible. It's terrible, but it's true, okay? So here I am. This is a moment that I go back to very frequently. I've said this before, but I have to tell you that like where I am with my father today at 35 is better than my relationship with my dad has ever been. And my relationship with my dad has been good for quite a few years now. And I, as far as I know, consciously, I'm not harboring any guilt or resentment. I don't think that I am, but I know that even though we're in a good place, the reason I say that is because when I feel a certain way, when I feel abandoned, when I feel rejected, when I feel insecure, when I feel not good enough, I still go back to that particular moment with my father and myself when I was a very young girl. That's the moment it always just like, whoosh, if it could take my soul, an entity, it would implant it into that trailer park in that living room. He is in front of me. I am behind him on two different couches. I can visualize it. So in my healing process, I just go to that Rachel as an adult. And like I said, I just am like, I know this sucks. I know that it didn't feel good, but you have to hear my heart when I say that this isn't about you and things get better. You know, making it super simple for a second grader to be able to understand. You don't have to overanalyze. You don't have to overexplain. You don't have to talk about, you know, you could if you wanted to, but you don't have to talk about like this is your dad and your dad's going through his own stuff. Second graders don't necessarily understand that, but even in your heart of hearts, you're already working through that as you're explaining it anyway. So you're working it out, right? So if you can envision, even since the past never, since the past doesn't exist, it's not happening, right? If you could envision if you were a second grader, if you've had an overwhelming energy around you all of a sudden when you were feeling that way, whatever it was, this low level emotion that you're feeling, if there was a certain energy that all of a sudden floated around you that gave you this like sincere amount of it's going to be okay. Couldn't explain it. Wouldn't even know if you could. Did that really happen? Kind of questions after the fact, right? But what's the worst that could happen if you're sitting here trying to heal your inner child? Nothing changes. But what happens if I keep telling myself over and over and over and over and over and over again that that there was a presence there when I was in second grade, that there was something that made me feel comforted, that there was something that led me to believe I was going to be okay, regardless of what my situation was, I was going to be okay, right? You don't think that somehow, some way has these rippling effects through your mind because your body and your mind are two separate things. I would love to heal my body, but right now what I think in reference to that is I'm just healing the spirit that was present there. That spirit's still within me, right? That thing is still there. So all I'm doing is healing that. And it's kind of magical to understand how easy it can be. And so if I go back to this moment over and over and over and over and over again, as I mentioned, and I'm telling myself this as the second grader, as I'm holding her closely, if I'm holding space for her, I'm making it comfortable, whatever it is, right? Then the rippling effects to who I am today is that now it kind of becomes my new belief, right? So one of my favorite things about beliefs is that they're just something that you think about all the time. Oh God, that was so mentally freeing when I discovered that. Your belief is just something that you think about all the time. All right, a belief is something that you think about all the time. So what does that mean? That means that your beliefs are changeable. That means they're not permanent. That means that right now you might say your favorite color is blue and you believe that to your core, but you might change your mind one day and think pink's now my favorite color, right? You didn't tell yourself that a while. Well, blue's been my favorite color since I was a kid. Blue was my favorite color because it was my mom's favorite color. I've always loved blue. I've always loved blue, but I kind of like pink. I kind of like pink. I like pink in flowers. I like pink in clothes. I like pink. I mean, I'd wear it more often than I'd wear blue. I think I might like pink. I mean, I really like pink in balloons. I really like pink in desserts. I really like pink, you know, when I can wear it in my makeup as well. Like, so you can see where this is going. It's just like you're reminding yourself all of a sudden is that you used to think about blue all the time, and now pink just happened to show up from time to time. And so now it's been a prominent thought in your brain. And a thought is just a belief is just a thought you think all the time. So if I think all the time that I'm healing my young self, if I think all the time that all along I had a guidance system that supported me and got me to where I am, everything happened for this reason for me to be in spiritual growth and development so I could heal myself in that moment when I didn't have what I needed. Okay, that was big. That was aha. That was woo-hoo-y. That was hippie-ish, but I hope that it resonated with you. I hope that it resonated with you because that is how you do it. That is it. It's the goofiness that is spiritual growth, is meditating in your brain, visualizing yourself as a little being, It's all connected. It's all the same thing. It sounds weird when you separate it out and go, okay, well, if I was just to envision myself walking into a trailer park, you know, soul alone, no physical body, and then I tap this little person on the shoulder, I probably scare the crap out of them because I'm just a being, an entity in this room. Then yes, of course, it sounds crazy weird. But if you envision that you give yourself a quiet space and you close your eyes and you can picture yourself in that room where you were hurt or that you were traumatized or that somebody didn't look after you, and you can smell the same memory, you can feel the temperature of it, you can get goosebumps or whatever, then it doesn't really seem that far-fetched, does it? I don't think it seems that far-fetched. So I couldn't have asked it to go another way, i.e. I have no regrets. I guess I just don't think it's necessarily true anymore. I don't think it's true because I could have asked it to go another way. I am asking it to go another way. I am digging deep inside myself to understand what my quirks are, what my programming is, what my belief system was implanted to me about my self-worth and my body and who I needed to show up as, being feminine or being a girl or being white trash or being white or being not religious or whatever it was. So I could have asked for it to be another way. I could have asked, I can ask for it to be another way. I can ask that I wish I would have had a more supportive father growing up. I wish I would have had access to a masculine side so I felt more balanced. I got so much femininity and I got so much nurturing and so much caring out of my mother when I was a young person that it's no surprise that I'm incredibly feminine today. It's no surprise that I like my makeup and that I like my hair and that my breasts were a huge focal point about my sensuality growing up because I very much mimicked what my mother gave me in comfort growing up. But I desired the masculine. I desired what I would have gotten from a masculine type of comfort and security. I didn't get that. And so to me, this is just me spitballing, of course, but I think that that's why I'm so insecure at anything that I do. I have zero confidence. I fake it till I make it, like it's nobody's business. But through a life coaching session this year, I found out that I don't really have a lot of confidence at all. I think subconsciously knew, but I couldn't wrap my brain around that was what I was lacking. Like it just manifested for me in insecure and anxious. Like that's how I would feel, is insecure and anxious and probably even sweaty, if I had to say. Okay. So it's no surprise that I wanted to be just like my mom, even though I shouldn't say, let me rephrase that. It's no surprise that I showed up like my mom, but I desired very heavily to be like my dad. This is also a really important conversation if you're somebody who struggles with your sexuality or representation right now, because do you hear what I'm saying? I'm saying that even though I believe that I'm a heterosexual female, I do believe I was born in the right body. I appreciate my vulva and my breasts, but I very much have always aspired to have a masculine tone in my life. I always desired having that because, again, that's what it visualized for me. Being feminine in my family was almost weakness because my mom didn't work. She didn't provide. So you needed to be masculine to get those things. And when I didn't get them from my father, that was a huge gaping hole in my life. That's my trauma. That's mine. I mean, I don't know. We never want to compare. Okay. I'm not trying to like, you're talking like there could be physical trauma. And you're like, there could be emotional trauma. It's so important that we're spearheading all of it. Studies have proven, this is not Rachel saying this, studies have proven that emotional trauma sometimes is often worse than physical trauma. It's sneakier. It's implanted deeper. It's more vindictive. There's lots of different reasons why, but it doesn't take away, by the way, that if you've had physical trauma in your life, it sucks. It's terrible. My heart goes out to you. But it's just crazy. It's just crazy when you start doing this work, you know. I would encourage this. You can sit down and talk to your parents. The more you know about how their life was growing up, the more you're going to start to understand them. And when you can start to understand them, you're going to start to see them more as human beings and less of adults that effed it up for you. I don't really have that opportunity. Like, I shouldn't say I don't have the opportunity because I've got grandparents that are still living. So I really should take that opportunity. I just have never asked my dad. I think I'm too afraid to ask him. He's really never talked a lot about his childhood. I know he lost his sister very young and his parents then divorced, you know, via an affair, no less. So I know my dad had a lot of trauma and he grew up, which is an interesting time. I know that my mom had a lot of trauma, but, and that's kind of the thing is like, I don't even want to talk to my mom about her past right now. And that sounds really selfish. But it's just where I'm at in my journey. But understanding them will definitely shed some light on you. But the reason I shared that I'm not at a place where I'm talking to my parents yet about their past is because I feel so distracted by that. Like, I almost feel like if I did understand a little bit more about them, is that it would only add more to my plate about who I am and why I am the way that I am. So I'm trying my best to do things from scratch. And I don't know if that really helps or hinders the process. Like, definitely do you. Like, if you have great relationships with your family members, I would 1000% encourage you to get out and hear their stories. Not only would they be very honored to share those and relive those moments, but it would be almost like a shortcut into your journey, in my opinion. Like I said, like, I think, I don't know, to be honest, like, for me, just working through my own crap, I definitely think I'll get there one way or the other. There's no wrong way to get there, but I'm doing a lot of self-analyzation instead of everybody else is responsible for the way that I show up in the world. And I don't even know if I'm doing that as an admirable thing, to be frank. Like, I just feel like I'm just weighed down by other people's problems, so I can only handle my own right now. And that sounds really kind of crazy to say, considering what I do for a living, but I mean, personally, like, I'm able to separate my clients' lives from mine, and I think that's incredibly important for everybody all around, because you want me to come to your session with clear energy, fully recharged, and so on and so forth. You do not want me to be depleted. And in the same regard, I need to protect myself from that stuff so that it doesn't affect my life personally as well, so that my energy is not completely depleted when I try to go be a great mom and great wife and so on and so forth. So here we are full circle in time in terms of really understanding where you're at and where you want to go. You know, like, I hope that one of the takeaways from these podcasts has been is that it's all incremental. There is just no overnight change. I wish that it was that easy, but it's not. Like, it took you however many years to get here, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, whatever. So you have to recognize that it's just not an Amazon Prime world. You're not going to be able to undo all these habits overnight. You just won't. And that's what kind of sucks, is because when you're actively making these changes or digging deep into this for yourself, it's painful, because you have to walk through the pain. All these years, all we've been doing is shoving shit under the rug, or we've been dismissing it or not even being aware of it. So we've been overeating and over smoking and having sex with strangers and spending wildly and not being right with our finances and definitely not having a connection to a higher power. So we're in this cyclical loop of guilt and shame and not doing things the way that we truly want to or feel fulfilled by. And that's where we're at. That's where we've gotten stuck in. Okay. So you are very deserving of a fruitful life. You're very deserving of a flow life, is like what I like to say. You know, feeling like you're in flow, like things are going your way, that you can handle things even if they don't. Everybody's very deserving of that. But this journey it's instrumental in the process of sitting on the riverbank and being aware of these thoughts. You're not the thinker. You're not the thinker of the thoughts, but you're not the thoughts. You're the thinker of the thoughts. I can't believe I just like screwed it up 45 times. I did it wrong. Stop. Reset your mouth, Rachel. You are not the thoughts. You are the thinker of the thoughts. Meaning, I am not abandonable. I am not rejectionable. Like, I don't fit the cues for being dismissed all the time. Those are just thoughts that I'm thinking about myself. What I think about myself is that I am an energy being having a human experience. I have capabilities beyond what I even understand at the moment, but I'm leaning into them. I have the 100% capability of healing myself and recognizing my potential and understanding that nobody needs to control how I feel. I'm the one that's in control of that. But while I still can be very much understanding that my outside world is influenced, that's true. But I ultimately get to choose what those thoughts do to me, what those thoughts mean to me, and how I intercept them and then weave them into my everyday life. So it is a process, to say the least, but it is a beautiful one at that. You are done and beyond bypassing things and throwing them under the rug and absorbing other people's hate and pain and struggles because you think it's easier for you to do that so they don't explode on somebody else. Like, you're done doing that stuff, because what is it doing to you? Just look at it. I don't care if you were conditioned your whole life to be the camel in the family to carry it all on your back. You're done. You have to be done for your own mental capacity and your freedom and your happiness. You just do. And the sooner you get started, the better off you're going to be, just as a heads up, you know? like actively dive into doing the personal development so you don't hit a quarter life crisis, so you don't go through a quarter midlife crisis. You're still going to go through crises, by the way, but it's still going to happen, right? Doing personal development and spiritual growth is never going to be about not having a bad day. It's never going to be about contrast not existing in your world anymore. Those things are mandatory, because the more exposure you have to things you don't want, the greater clarity you get on the things you do want. So we are not pulling the wool over our eyes or sticking your head in the sand as an ostrich may do, in assumption that we are impermeable to change or impermeable to anything that doesn't feel 1000% ecstatic all the time. And that's also because there's a lot of things that are beyond our control. As we know, we cannot forget that there's 7 billion people on planet Earth. So even when we get right with ourselves, even when we are very in tune with our emotions and our feelings, there are still 6.9999999999 billion other people out there co-creating on this planet that don't see things the way we do. They don't execute experiences the way that we do. Their beliefs are different than ours. So it doesn't mean they're wrong. They're just different. So you're going to be bumping into those people, and the things that you need and want will coalesce with their things too. So you just have to be aware of that. It doesn't mean that you won't get everything that you want. It doesn't mean that you won't feel exactly the way that you want to feel, but you might not be able to have a straight line there. You might have to take a little pit stop here or there along the way to intercept those messages or those experiences while you're on your way to yours. So don't beat yourself up about not seeing change immediately. It is definitely, it's a process. It's a process, all right? Go to life therapy. Go do therapy. Get to talk therapy. Counselor, if you want to hook yourself up with a life coach. I know a good one. She's sitting right here stroking her hair, okay? Volunteer. Growth and contribution are huge. If you cannot give your money right now, volunteer your time. And I'm not talking like all your free time and all your weekends, but you could do one night a month. You could do it at your school for your kids. You could do it at your community center. You could do it at your church. You could do it at your gym. You could foster animals, which is very rewarding and fun at the same time. But it's all about these confidence builders that you need. It's really hard when you get stuck in a circle of I want to get moving, but I just don't have any motivation to get moving. So I want to get moving, but I don't have any motivation to get moving. That's a sad circle to get stuck in. I definitely have been in those. But something's got to give somewhere. So whether it's taking a walk around the block, eating one more banana and one less brownie, you still have the brownie, by the way, right? Maybe it's not immediately texting your ex when they call you for a booty call. Maybe you still go, but maybe you give them a little bit of time to think about their shit for a while, right? All of these are all about progressive little changes, because you cannot change everything overnight. It's the reason that your fad diets don't work. It's the reason that people go broke even after winning the lottery. It's just not feasible for our human brains. It doesn't work that way. 21 days makes a habit, 90 days makes a lifestyle change. So do not forget that. And be very graceful to yourself. And when we talk about incremental change, you can't change your weight and your eye vision and your clothing and your car and your house and your partner all at the same time. You might, but that's a pretty drastic change. It's a pretty drastic change. And what I have noticed that has worked really well for myself is that incremental change. So when, just as an example, when I decided to go to the gym, I didn't change anything about my diet. I still ate what I wanted. I still ate whenever I wanted. I still ate out. I didn't change anything. I just started moving my body. And when that became like a new familiar to me, then I started looking at my diet. And then when those two things seemed to be more of an autopilot, then I started considering other things like the financial things that I needed to really take a look at. But because of the confidence I was having in my physical development, and I had already had emotional development under my belt for going to talk therapy, I felt so much more confident to navigate the thing I didn't know. And this is what? Healing my inner child, because I have a fear of not knowing what to do. So if I have confidence in eating and confidence in moving my body, then I'm going to take those two little blocks and I'm going to tackle this thing that has been giving me paralyzing anxiety, which is navigating finances and understanding my money and so on and so forth. But now I feel more equipped to handle it because I've seen that I can be successful in other areas of my life. And this, again, a little bit harder because it's a little bit deeper in terms of vulnerability or the thing I feel insecure about because it was programmed to me that I asked too many questions or that I should have known more or that I should have known better, whatever it was. So you see how that's full circle. I'm empowering myself. I'm gaining the confidence. I'm doing something that's really meaningful and I'm healing my inner child that didn't think that this was something I was capable of doing. I'm telling all my naysayers, which is loudly just my monkey mind in my own brain saying, who do you think you are? You could never do this. And it might have started from somebody else. It often does. But again, you just have to make sure that you look through your lens of empathy for that person because they did the best they could with what they had. They didn't know any better. They don't know why they ignored you when you talked to them. I can tell you why, but that's just my own personal experience because I replicated that bullshit because my dad did it to me. I ain't proud of it, but I'm telling you guys, this is why you do personal development so you do not recreate the wheel that your parents set forth before you that you do not want to do to your children. Get right with yourself because you deserve it, okay? Whew! All right. I feel like I just like rambled for the straight 49 minutes, and that's what I'm going to leave it with, all right? So hopefully some tangible things for you to do. Just remember that your journey is not wrong. So some of you might jump into life therapy the way that I did, and it goes well. Some of you might go to the gym like I did, and it works well. Some of you might tackle your diet first, and some of you might, you know, cut some toxic people out of your life. Some of you might pick up all of the personal development books in the world. Some of you might run a marathon next month. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It does not look like anybody else's except for Samantha's and, you know, Jennifer's and Ashley's journey. Your journey is your own for a reason. It's meant to be that way. It's meant to be that way. All paths lead to one place, okay? And I could morbidly say we all die, right? I'm not going to say that, okay? But we all have our own journey. So do not look over at your best friend, Sally Sue, and see that, you know, she's going on another vacation. Don't look at your best friend, Beth Ann, and see that, you know, she just paid off another credit to her debitor. Don't look at your father who just bought his third home, you know, vacationing around the world. You can't compare. Your book is different, you know? Your forewords are different. Your table of contents are different. So your subjects and genres are probably different. So there's no way your journey is going to be the same. It just isn't. So stop comparing that it is. And this is very difficult. But if I could give you one thing in terms of expediting the momentum of your personal development and spiritual growth, it would be to stop comparing yourself like we just talked about. But going deeper into that and really figuring out like is why am I so hung up on that? Am I hung up on it because I feel like those people are judging me and that's an emotion I can't handle? Or is it because I feel like I'm missing out on the thing that they had? You know, those are both, they're two different reasons that neither of them matter, but that's what you have to really get in tune with so that you can fix that for yourself. Is this something that is important to me or do I think I need to have it so I'll fit in with the tribe? Oh God, that's it, y'all. Okay. You have to detach from what else everybody else thinks is important. So maybe having a big house means nothing to you. Maybe you just need space for you and your fur dog or you and your partner. Great. Do not feel demeaned if you're living in an apartment when somebody's like, God, you should have a house by now. Why don't you have a house by now? Do not feel demeaned if you're driving a tiny little Prius when everybody you know is driving Navigators and Escalades. Okay. Do not feel demeaned if, like I said, like let's use as an example, maybe you went to Des Moines, Iowa to visit your best friend for your summer vacation and somebody you know went on a 10-day cruise all across the world. Stop comparing. Your vacation's not any less amazing and your experiences are not any less impactful for the best friends you're hanging out with than it is for this person on a cruise ship. Just because they spent more money and they're visually seeing islands and you see Des Moines, Iowa, it doesn't mean that your experiences can't be just as impactful, just as important, just as meaningful. Just stop comparing yourself and definitely get clear about what's important to you and not what's clear to everybody else or important to everybody else. Just do it, okay? So I really hope you got some value from today. I appreciate you so much for tuning in. You know how I feel about that. It validates everything that I get to do. If you did get some value, don't forget you can share this podcast, especially for somebody local. I think that people really like to support local because that means that if at any point they're like, oh my gosh, I really dig this podcast. It turns out I can hang out with this person. She'll come to my house and do a free in-home party. You're damn right I will. You're damn right I will, okay? So I love, love, love that it keeps our community connected and together in that manner. But just in case you needed a replay, don't forget Facebook, Instagram, right here, of course, on Anchor. Also on the TikTok, you can find me at A Good Girls Guide 2. And if you're looking for the private VIP page, you definitely have to message me to get your invite for that. Obviously, on Facebook is easiest to do that so I can add you directly. But the email at A Good Girls Guide 2 at Instagram. goodgirlsguide2@gmail.com is where you can send any request, any information that you're looking for, or just want to share your story. I would love, love, love to put that out there. So we did a really great podcast last week with Josie. I've got a couple in the making to do a summer series for podcast guests. So make sure that you are tuning in as those are rolling out. I am so excited about them, to say the least. It's going to be a really good time, I think. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. I love you guys so much. You mean the world to me. Just grateful to me that I get to sit here and work through my own crap. I'm quite literally healing myself, you know, as these podcasts roll out. And I really hope that it does something for you as well. So we will see you next week, it sounds like, on the podcast. I don't know what we'll talk about, but we'll figure it out. And I look forward to hearing from you in some other way, shape, or form. So stay happy, stay healthy, and wash your hands, everybody. Bye-bye.